Welcome to Illinois Family Spotlight, a conversation about issues of the day from a biblical perspective, as well as highlights from interviews, conferences, and events. Here's Monty Larrick.
Thanks for making Illinois Family Spotlight part of your day. We're highlighting Scott Phelps' presentation at the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Marriage and Family Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Mr. Phelps is the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign. During the conference, he pointed out that the best way to restore a culture of marriage and family is to reach a new generation of American youth on the clear objective benefits of marriage and family.
I remember as a young boy, I grew up at First Baptist Church of San Francisco, and it's kind of a downtown, kind of like a Moody Church kind of thing, kind of a grand thing. And I remember at about 5 years old, I was a ring bearer in my little tuxedo. And I remember from my earliest memories thinking, I hope I get to do this someday. And always growing up, having an anticipation and a hope and a desire to get married someday. Well, fast forward a few years, I'm at San Francisco State University, and I'm involved with InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, and I'm involved in the leadership team there, and there's this girl on the leadership team named Carrie Flack. And during the summer, we go away for chapter camp, where we would plan out our agenda for the coming year for our ministry on campus. And I was between my junior and senior year. And my goal for chapter camp that summer was to tell Carrie Flack that I liked her. That was my goal. So we get up to chapter camp. It's in the Redwoods in California. It's beautiful, you know. And first morning, I get up, and I'm early, and I go out into the woods, and I climb up on a boulder, and I'm sitting there having my quiet time, and it's a beautiful day, and I'm singing and having a great time. Well, the bell rings for breakfast at the dining hall. So I pack up my things, and I start down the trail to go back toward the dining hall, and who do I see sitting on a log not far from where I was with her Bible open but Carrie Flack? And my heart skipped a beat. And I thought, it's a sign, it's a sign. And then she goes like this, she goes, oh, was that you singing? I was so embarrassed. I thought I was out there by myself. I thought it was just me and Jesus, but no, Carrie was there too. So check this out. We walked together to the dining hall and we sat together at the dining hall. It's now the end of the week. I haven't said it yet. This is how pathetic it is. She's literally at the trunk of her car putting her suitcase in. And I walk up to her and I'm like, excuse me, Carrie, I just wanted to tell you, I like you. I did it. I said it. And then she goes like this. She goes, oh, I think you're special. What? I don't even know what that means. I'm special. I just said I like you. That was 42 years ago, and we just celebrated 40 years of marriage this past year. And my life has not been the same since, because marriage changes you. It changes you for the better. Because it sharpens you and equips you and builds you and challenges you. And I am a different person, a better person, because Carrie Flack, now Phelps, has been an integral part of my life and I of hers. And marriage is powerful and marriage is beautiful. So, National Marriage Campaign, restoring the dream. That's what we're all about. We want to lift up the dream of marriage and family for our young people today. We believe that the next generation of American youth should have a clear and compelling message on the beauty and the value of marriage for themselves. That's all. Helping our young people see these things. All right. So the High College of Marriage and Family, I thought I would start off with a breakdown on who's here today. I like to sort of look from the airplane down, right? It's been our pleasure to work with the Illinois Family Institute for many years. When I was a pastor many years ago, before doing what I do now, I was always, as a pastor, relying on IFI. and so grateful for their work. But my perspective is that Illinois Family Institute is all about taking the research and working that into the public policy in the state of Illinois, right? And encouraging educators and parents and homeschoolers to understand that to know and to do these things, it's all about advocacy. We are the Absence and Marriage Education Partnership, and then what we do is we try to take all of the wonderful research at Institute for Family Studies, and then we try to break it down kind of like the Living Bible, you know. We try to kind of break it down into kids speak, and we package it in workbooks, and then we distribute that to schools to teach to their kids as an alternative to explicit inappropriate sex education. And so what we want to do is focus, and all of our materials is really focused with a core message on marriage, why marriage matters. Why marriage matters for you, for your spouse, for your children, for your culture, for your community. That marriage is the cornerstone of culture. And the big beast with sex education, I could go on about the problems with sex education, but the biggest beast in terms of the problem of sex education is there's no message of marriage in it. And so what we want to do is flip the script on that, and we want schools, we work from the inside out to help schools train and teach their kids about the beauty and the value of marriage and why sexual activity should be reserved for that. All right, so then focusing a little bit more on just what we do here at A&M, we have the National Marriage Campaign, and then we have our Curriculum the Success Sequence program. So first of all, the National Marriage Campaign, let me just mention that, seeks to ensure that every teenager in the country has the opportunity to hear a clearly reasoned, positive presentation on the benefits of abstinence until marriage and instruction in preparing for a healthy future marriage. We think that these two things are fundamental for our young people to understand. We want them to learn about why resisting sexual pressure can be helpful for you in preparing for a future marriage relationship. And those two things go together. So we are the Abstinence and Marriage Education Partnership. And the reason we launched the National Marriage Campaign is really to focus on the marriage component of the message. There are a lot of groups around the country that will say that they're teaching abstinence. And there isn't a school in America, by the way, that will say we don't teach abstinence. Do you understand what I'm talking about? But what do you mean? Generally speaking, around the country, whether it's a school or an abstinence group, it's wait until you're really ready to make a commitment. Now, there are some groups that will teach wait until you're married, but by and large, a lot of it is wait until you're older, wait until you're in love, wait until you're mature, and what's missing, they don't take the ball into the end zone, they stop short at the 20, and I'm like, take it in, score! It's not just wait until you're older, wait until you're in love, wait until you're mature, wait until you're in college, wait until you're 18, it's wait until you're married. And so we want to lift up in the National Marriage Campaign, we want to say, hey, stay focused on the main thing here. The purpose of abstinence isn't to avoid problems, although that's a nice benefit. The purpose of abstinence is prepare you for the marriage relationship. As Robert Rector puts it, it's abstinence in preparation for marriage. Abstinence in preparation for marriage, that's what we're talking about. But for now, what I wanted to do was talk a little bit about biblical worldview. Researchers tell us that teens are exposed to about 9 hours of media per day. I think it's more than that. I think it's more like 25 hours per day, right? And it's not just our kids, it's all of us. So this is a problem. Not only for the relational component, certainly is a significant problem, but think about the content. Are there any sexual messages or images that in the media that our kids are taking in? See, and it's not just that our kids are exposed to increasingly explicit sexual content at earlier and earlier ages. It's not just that, but think about this. How much of the sexual material that our kids are drinking in from the media on a constant daily basis shows sex and marriage as a thing? I don't mean shows it as a good thing, shows it as a thing at all. What TV shows, what movies, what social media, what? And so what's happening is you've got a generation of young people that are exposed to sexual content that is explicit and inappropriate, and there's no understanding or concept of how that relates to a marriage relationship. And so we just think it's fundamental and important to help young people understand the role and the connection. It's not that sex is bad. God created it. It's for the context of a marriage relationship. And so what I just thought that we would do today is start off with a biblical basis for teaching marriage to youth. So this is a biblical worldview conference, And what I was going to do in this hour is more about some of the facts and figures and statistics, but I thought, no, time out a minute. Let's make sure we have a very clear biblical understanding of why we're doing what we're doing. Nothing I'm going to share is probably new to you. The fact that you're here today tells me you probably know all this already. But what I want to do is just highlight some key passages that I think can be super helpful for you to hang your hat on when you're having a conversation with these things with others or with your children, okay? So the way I look at it is there's two key passages that I like to center in on in terms of having a biblical worldview. And the question we have to ask is, you know, who's teaching our kids? Is it us or is it the media and the world and the schools? So let's start with the biblical mandate, and then let's look at the biblical message. The biblical mandate, of course, comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 6 and 7, following the Shema in verse 4, which means to hear. And then he says in verse 6, and these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. And so that is the biblical mandate that we are to take, that the role and responsibility of educating your kids is you. It's not the teacher at the school. It's not the youth pastor. It's not the pastor. They can help. Yay. We want to encourage and help teachers in public schools and Christian schools. There's a lot of wonderful Christian teachers in public schools. We want to encourage them and help them. But what we want to do is we want to help teachers communicate truths that the parents would be excited about and supportive of. And that we view the teachers in the classroom, whether it's a Christian school or public school, as support services for you, but you're the primary responsibility, right? And so you can't just hope that your kids know these things. You have to know that they know these things, and you know that they know these things because you taught it to them. Three quick points on this. Number one, it says, and these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. The first message, parents, is for you. You can't teach your kids the word if you're not in the word. Are you in the word? Parents, are you in the word? This is like what I think of is, you know, when you fly, they will always say to you, and it seems kind of rude, actually. Now, look, if there's going to be a problem, the oxygen masks are going to drop down. Now, forget about your kids for a minute. You get you squared away, okay? You put your own oxygen mask on, and then, now that doesn't seem very nice. But what's the point? You can't help your kids if you're passed out. How are you going to help your kids if you're passed out? You got to be in the Word. And I don't mean just, oh, yeah, no, I know. No, stop. We're stopping the car right now. Are you in the Word? What does it say? These words that I command you shall be on your heart. The Word of God needs to be on your heart so that, verse 7, you teach them diligently to your children. What have you done, think about this, to diligently teach the Word to your kids? That's our responsibility. That's what we're supposed to be doing. You shall teach them diligently to your children. That's our responsibility. We have to know the Word, and we can't know the Word unless we're in the Word. And then when we're in the Word, then we can teach these things to our kids. And it is our responsibility to do so. And we want to make sure that they are learning the Word. You shall teach them diligently to your children. That's the second point. First is it's got to be, I have to be in the Word. And then I have to teach the Word to my children. And then the third thing is I need to teach them consistently, regularly, daily, continually. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise. So the first thing we want to understand is we have a God-given responsibility over our children. To teach them and to teach them well and to root them in the Word of God so that they have this clear understanding. Now, why is this so important contextually? When Moses gives this command, they are on the banks of the Jordan ready to cross over into Paganville, okay? They're going over the Jordan into Canaan, and the warnings have been given and will be given throughout the book of Deuteronomy. Careful, careful, careful. Paganville, your kids are crossing over the river and they're going to be growing up in a culture that does not know me. Too bad the Word of God isn't relevant for us at all today. We don't have to worry about stuff like that. The warning is that if you don't teach your kids these things, you're going to lose your kids. You're going to lose your kids. One of the saddest verses in the Bible is Judges 2:10, and there arose another generation after Joshua that did not know the Lord or the things they had done for Israel. And the book of Judges reads like a horror story because they didn't do the thing that they were warned that they must do. So we need to be careful to understand and take seriously the biblical mandate to teach these things to our kids. What things are we teaching? Well, Deuteronomy chapter 6 happens to follow Deuteronomy chapter 5. See what I did there? What's Deuteronomy chapter 5? It's the Ten Commandments. Well, wait a minute, time out. I thought we had that already in Exodus 20. We did, and they blew it. And they blew it. And so now Deuteronomy duonamos means second law. Deuteronomy chapter 5 is the re-giving of the law. We're going to do this again, people. So Deuteronomy duonamos is we're going to give it to you again, chapter 5. And now do it. Teach it to your kids. Super important. You got to be in the Word. You got to teach the Word to your kids. You got to teach it all the time. That's my little outline. I just wanted to share with you again. I'm sure you know these things, but this is a really good passage for you to hang your hat on in terms of your personal responsibility before the Lord with your kids. Well, teaching what things? Teaching the Ten Commandments, which includes, by the way, you shall not commit adultery. Why is that one of the big ten? Because adultery is destructive to marriage and family and culture. And you have to understand how powerfully destructive this will be. If you don't teach your kids about the value of lifelong commitment, it's not going to go well for you. And so chapter 5 in Deuteronomy is part of what we are instructed. And I'm just going to take that and say we need to help our young people understand what marriage is, why marriage matters, and what a lifelong commitment is and why that matters. And then, of course, we need to model that for them.
Scott Phelps, the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Worldview Conference hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. More of his remarks from that event after this.
Dinosaurs, they're not a mystery. This is Ken Ham, a publisher of the award-winning family magazine, Answers. For a long time, a group of creatures called Lagopetids were thought to be the evolutionary ancestors of dinosaurs, but they've now found in the same rock layers as even the earliest dinosaurs. So now evolutionists have to rewrite evolution again. But the origin of dinosaurs isn't a mystery. If you start with the Bible, dinosaurs were land creatures, so they were created on day six. Two of every kind were taken on the ark, the rest drowned. Many were preserved as fossils. Those that survived on the ark eventually died off due to the same things that cause species to go extinct today. Yes, God created dinosaurs.
Want to know more about dinosaurs in the Bible? Visit us at AnswersRadio.com and sign up for free insights from Ken Ham delivered right to your inbox at AnswersRadio.com.
Need somewhere to belong? Try here. We're socialites. Find us at socialites.blog. We aim to cultivate meaningful friendships and create places for people to come together face to face.
We do weekly group, Bible study groups, swing dancing. We even do bonfires on occasion.
We also connect churches via their YA groups in the Chicagoland area.
We want to be the answer to the question of, where do you even meet people anymore? Come find us at socialites.blog. Check out some of the events we got going or any of the groups that we host regularly.
Socialites.blog.
Thanks for joining Illinois Family Spotlight. We're featuring a presentation made by Scott Phelps during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Worldview Conference hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Mr. Phelps is the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign. In this segment of Spotlight, he'll discuss how marriage is central to God's creation plan.
In Matthew chapter 19, Jesus is asked, he's asked particularly about divorce. And so he answers saying this way, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female and said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife and the two shall become one flesh, so they are no longer two but one flesh? What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. Now, this is beautiful because the Pharisees who are challenging him, what's their pride and joy? The law. They're really good at that. They know the law. They could recite it to you. You quote a verse and they'll tell you where it's at. They know it. They know it inside out and backwards. And what does Jesus say? Have you not read the Bible? Did you miss, I don't know, chapter 1? Jesus now is going to do a Bible study with the Bible teachers. And notice where he goes, by the way, when challenged about marriage. Scripture. Jesus doesn't need to go to Scripture. He's Jesus. He takes us to Scripture, to chapter 1. Let's go back to the beginning, people, and he uses that word. Have you not read that he who created them from what? From the beginning. Let's go back to the beginning. Genesis chapter 1. And he's quoting here Genesis 1, 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. That's the verse that Jesus is quoting. So the first point I would make here is that marriage is central to God's creation plan. Okay, it's central to God's creation plan. And notice how many times in 127, if you have a Bible and you can look at it, in that one verse, how many times is creation mentioned? I'll read it again. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. Get the point? I'm kind of slow, so God gave it to me three times. I created man and woman. I did that. I created them. But listen, if you don't believe that there is a God who created the heavens and the earth, then watch it. You can make marriage mean anything you want. Welcome to the United States 2025. When I reject the Creator, and maybe that's why I reject the Creator, is because I want to do whatever I want. That's what we're living in right now. The creation narrative is foundational to our understanding of biblical sexuality. Why does Romans 1:18, by the way, talk about you rejected the Creator and worshiped instead of the creation? We don't see any of that going on today. You rejected the Creator and worshiped the creation. You are having all kinds of sexual dysfunction. That's Romans chapter 1. Sexual dysfunction is the result of the rejection of the Creator and the worship of the creation. Understanding the reality of the creation, that God is the creator of heaven and earth, and by doing so, he is the author of it, then we understand biblical sexuality. So if a biblical worldview necessitates that we understand fundamentally that God is the creator of heaven and earth, he is the creator of male and female. Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning made them male and female? That's Genesis 1:27. And that is that marriage is central to God's creation plan. Let's go to the next point, is in verse 5. Marriage is central to God's creation plan. It's central to God's creation, central to God's plan. Verse 5. And he said, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. They are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate. So here you go. This now is Genesis 2:25. So Jesus, in his Bible study, goes from Genesis 1:27 now to 2:24, which is what he is quoting. Then the man said, therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. There it is. And so Jesus now is explaining that God made male and female, and then he brought them together to form a union. And watch it, that union, the creation of male and female, and then the union of them together is central to the creation narrative and to his plan. So it's not just God made man and God made woman, but God made man and God made woman and brought them together to form a union. And this is God's plan for sexuality, that it is part of the marital relationship. And so what we want to help young people understand is not sex is bad, avoid sex, but sex is good, it's beautiful, it's wonderful, it's from God. for the purpose of joining yourself to someone who loves you enough to make a lifelong commitment to you, and you become one with that person. Now, this isn't an illustration. He's not saying it's kind of like this. He's saying it is this. It is an ontological reality that you actually become one flesh, which is why verse 6, he says, you can't separate it. God is the author and therefore the authority on what marriage is. It's a man and a woman, and that it is a permanent commitment and relationship. The illustration I like to use here is if I were to take a bowl, if I had a pitcher of milk and a pitcher of water, and I poured them into the same bowl, and then I wanted to put the milk back in the pitcher and put the water back in the pitcher. What God has joined together, let not man, that's what I'm talking about. Jesus said, you can't do it. Can't do it. And so this is the point that Jesus is getting at, is that marriage is central to God's plan. It is necessary that we understand the reality of what occurs in a marriage relationship. This is why divorce, when it does occur, and if you've been through that, believe me, there is grace and there is mercy, but divorce is painful for this reason. And anyone who's been through it knows it. In fact, Jesus starts off his answer. I got to go to Matthew, back to Matthew 19 here, because when they challenge him further on divorce, Jesus says, from the beginning, it was not so. So in both places, Jesus goes back to Genesis, back to Genesis, back to Genesis. What do we have to do if we're going to have a biblical worldview of marriage and family? Back to Genesis, back to Genesis. We have to understand the foundation of what we believe and why we believe it. Marriage is and always will be one man and one woman for life. That will never change, because that is God's creation plan, and it's a good plan. It's not just that. It is God's plan for the marital union, that the two are made into one. And by the way, I think this is what Paul is getting at in Ephesians 5:31 there at the end, when he talks about the mystery of Christ in the church. I often hear it talked about as it's a picture to the world that our marriage, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing Ephesians 5:31 as a picture to the world. I'm seeing it as a description of the ontological reality of what happens. In the same way we come into a personal, lifelong, permanent relationship with Jesus Christ, so too a marriage relationship is an indissoluble relationship, and the two become one. That's what he gets at in 1 Corinthians 6 when he says, if you join your body to a prostitute, do you not know that you became one with her? That's the issue. That's the point. You become one, actually, not metaphorically. So it's very important that we understand that from a biblical perspective, a biblical worldview. All right, and then the last point I want to make is that marriage is central to God's provision for marriage and children. Let's see, provision for children. Yeah, I don't have this in Matthew 19. I'm just going to throw this as a bonus and go to Genesis 1:28. There is so much now about, you know, we don't want to have kids. We don't want to have kids. My daughter Megan out in New York sent me a text maybe a year or two ago now, maybe it was a year or so ago, that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle had like won some sort of a prize. Like, I don't know if it was a Nobel Prize or some big prize, because they had committed to only having two kids. And by the way, you've heard about the Dink, double income, no kids. They got some prize because they said they were only going to have two kids and no more. So I text my daughter back and I go, because I have four kids. I said, oh, that's interesting. So, like, if we did that, John and Matt wouldn't exist. But then I kept thinking, because my wife is a third child, and you and your sister wouldn't exist. My wife wouldn't exist. Her brother and sister wouldn't exist because their father is a third child. I wiped out the whole family. I'm serious. I kept going. It was weird how I just kept going and going and going, and your nephew wouldn't exist, and your niece wouldn't exist, and your cousin wouldn't exist. And finally, my kids are like, Dad, we got it. But this is where we're at today. But marriage is central to God's provision for children. And I think I've got it here in 1:28 is what I've got. Get my glasses here. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth and subdue it. And so the purpose of marriage is it is God's provision for children. That God created us with an amazing capacity for reproduction. And God's plan is that children would have a mother and a father. And so what we need to do is we need to help young people understand these things, that children aren't accessories, and that the idea that, you know, well, we don't want to have any kids isn't a good one. Notice it says, be fruitful and multiply. And by the way, in terms of the ontological union, the two becoming one, and being fruitful, those things go together. I never knew this. We had, my wife and I, we got rid of our antique furniture a few years ago. We finally, you know, we went a little modern. But we used to have antique furniture in our bedroom. And for years, I never even realized until recently, just before we got rid of the furniture, that our antique bed from like the Netherlands or someplace that we had bought in Longgrove, it was really old, like a genuine antique thing, that it had carved on the footboard and the headboard, fruit. And finally, I was like, oh, I get it. It worked. It worked. Four kids. And they're beautiful. And by the way, can I just say, there's a lot to love about life. There's nothing more special to me than my wife and my kids. Right? Right? Money, fame, job, whatever. No. It's my wife and my kids. That is life here. And that's who I do life with. It's who I love. It's who is texting me right now. Because we love each other, right? And it's so important. It's so beautiful. It's so valuable. The challenge, of course, is teaching these things in a culture that doesn't value, that doesn't have this. So, for example, my Quest book, which is part of the Success Sequence program, I'm teaching this on the south side of Chicago in an all-black school near Midway Airport, and I know that statistically that 70% of American black children are born outside the context of a marriage relationship. They don't have a married father in the home, okay? I'm going in with my Quest program, and I'm teaching these things, the beauty of marriage and family, and it's best when kids have a married mom and dad. Question, how do I do that? How do I go into a school that I know statistically the majority of the kids don't have what I'm saying is so fabulous? My tendency is, as I suppose many teachers' tendency is to skip that part. Because I don't want to hurt their feelings. I don't want to make them feel bad, right? So I can't talk to these kids about marriage and how great it is to have a mom and a dad and how that's statistically better for them. How am I going to do that? And so my tendency is to be like, don't do it. You're going to hurt their feelings. You're going to make them feel bad. And I don't want to make them feel badly. So there's a part of me that wants to just skip over that. But then I realize if I skip over that, am I helping them or hurting them? I'm hurting them. I have to do it. And when I push through my sensitivity and my natural resistance to doing so, how do they respond to that? Where have you been all my life? Could you teach us more about that? Because we never get to learn about these things because everyone else skips over it. It's not for you kids. Now, when I teach these kids, I do it lovingly and sensitively. And so, for example, I'm just giving you how do you do this? I say to them, now listen, when I'm saying that it's best, looking at all the data and statistics and facts and figures, because everything we teach is objective, am I saying that a single parent, a single dad, a single mom, am I saying that a single mom can't be a fabulous mom? Am I saying that? And they're like, no, of course not. Most single moms are doing a fabulous job. And listen, if you're living with a single parent, a single mom, help out around the house, do your part, take out the trash, do the dishes, make your bed. I talk to kids just like that. Because your mom is working super hard to care for you. She loves you so much. She's working so hard. Tell your mom you love her. Help her out. Be a helper for her. I'm not saying single moms can't be great. Most are. But what? It's harder. And so think about what you want for yourself, for your future, for your children. Robert Rector at the Heritage Foundation told me this one time. He said, sometimes when I'm talking to young people, I will say to them, how many of you want to have children? All the hands went up, you know. And I said, how many of you want to have children? All the hands go up. And then he says this, how many of you want your kids to be poor? Not so many hands. And of course, the point is, if you don't want your kids to grow up in poverty, then understand the value of marriage because it's going to benefit not only you and your spouse, but your children as well. Because it's God's provision for children. So God's provision for the children is a married mom and dad who will love them and care for them and feed them and nurture them and clothe them and put a roof over their head and, most importantly, fill their little heart and mind with the Word of God so they will know the truth of God in order to live a God-fearing life to the glory of God. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And that is our role. That is our responsibility. All right. So that's the biblical mandate. We're told what to do. And that's the biblical message. We're told how we're supposed to do it, or what the message is supposed to be. And the reason why I spent some time on that, on the biblical message, is because there's so much confusion in our world today, especially for our young kids, especially after Obergefell. And our Christian kids are caught up in this because the whole thing is, you know, love is love. Love is love, right? And our kids are emotionally manipulated then to support an unbiblical position. And so it's especially incumbent upon us to teach them biblically, lovingly, but biblically. We speak the truth in love. Absolutely we do. But our kids are drinking in 9 hours or 25 hours per day of media telling them the opposite of what this says. And so we have to know that our kids are hearing alternative messages. And this must be central then in our teaching. We must have a biblical message for our kids. We must help them understand these things. It's so, so important. All right, so that's the biblical mandate, the biblical message. That's the high calling of marriage and family. What's the solution? This is the good news. This is research at the University of Michigan. And over decades, look at what we see. You've got approximately 90% over decades of high school seniors saying, I want to get married, I want to have a family, I want it to go well. Hello! Who's helping them? Who's teaching them? Who's guiding them? Where are they learning this? When I asked teachers at my training seminars, and so we were just talking about all of this, and 90% of American high school seniors say they want to get married and have a family, but where are they learning this? Who's teaching this to them? And so I asked my teachers and my seminars, where do kids learn this today? And in my training seminars for public school teachers, generally they will say, the first answer I usually get is church. Oh, church. They learn that at church. So then I'll say, really? And if they go to church, is your church teaching this to them? A lot of churches. People are always shocked when I tell them this. We have an easier time getting our program into public schools than into churches or Christian schools. Yeah. Most are a little controversial. Why is this, by the way? Why is this? Genesis 2:24. God built it. One of the reasons why our programs work so well is because it comports with their nature, right? When I was 5 years old, I wanted this. There's something deep within us that longs for that lifelong companionship and love and community. It's not enough for us to say, you know what? I'm going to homeschool my kids, and I'm for that. We homeschool all four of our kids. Don't get me wrong. I'm for that. But it's not enough. It's not enough if we save our kids while the whole culture crashes around us. Yes, we want to teach our kids well, faithfully, biblically. But we've also got to have a message for the kids out there. We've got to care for those out there in the public schools, in the culture, who are not part of our family, who are not part of our church, because it's not good for us. It's not good. Look, if we care about culture, if we care about people, yes, of course we will share with them the gospel, but we will also help them understand a pathway to healthy living. We will teach the principles of the success sequence to help them understand the benefits of getting an education, getting a job, and getting married before having children. We'll lay that out for them clearly so that they see a pathway forward. All right?
Scott Phelps, the founder and executive director of the National Marriage Campaign, during the Illinois Family Institute's 2025 Worldview Conference, hosted by Belmont Bible Church in Downers Grove. Join conservative activist Riley Gaines and the Illinois Family Institute for the Faith, Family, and Freedom Banquet, Friday night, November 7th, at Denolfo's in Homer Glen. To reserve seats, go to IllinoisFamily.org and click Events or call 708-781-9328. IllinoisFamily.org, click Events or call 708-781-9328. We would love to see you there. Please support the work of IFI. All donations are tax deductible. And tell your family and friends about Illinois Family Spotlight. Until next time, stay healthy. stay active, and God bless.
For more information about Illinois Family Spotlight, visit ifiaction.org. And to email questions and comments, do so at feedback@ifiaction.org.